The Laughter Permitted podcast is brought to you by Ally. Do it right.
Hello. Welcome to Laughter Permitted. I'm Julie Foudy.
I'm Lynn Ozawi. And if you right now are looking for a little dose of inspiration or a lot of dose of inspiration, we have you covered.
Do we ever have you covered? Our guest is Paralympian Elena Nichols, who is a five-time Paralympian and the first woman to win gold in both the Summer and Winter Paralympics. She won gold in wheelchair basketball at the 2008 Beijing Paralympics and then learned the sport of adaptive skiing and won two more gold medals at the 2010 Vancouver Paralympics. She also competed in paracanoe at the 2016 Rio Games. And as impressive as she is as an athlete, just wait until you hear how she humans. Elena is crushing it as a human. You'll hear it when she tells her full story. So get comfortable listening. It's Elena Nichols. Hey there, Dope Village. Lynn and I have been involved in women's sports our entire lives. And truly, we've never been more excited for what's to come in this women's sports space. And one big reason, Ally. Ally has made a commitment to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And that means more money going to women's sports and more visibility for what these incredible athletes are accomplishing. Ally is on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
So here at Laughter Permitted, we're going to keep telling the stories of trailblazing women. And every time you listen in, you are part of that change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com.
Kick back, relax, and unwind. Let's have a good time finding the joy in life. We're smiling so bright, talking and laughing combined. Feeling all right, get comfortable listening. It's Laughter Permitted.
Have you two known each other?
You know,
that's a great question.
I was actually reflecting on that this morning. I remember the moment I met you, but I don't remember the year. And I also have one of our first pictures together on the red carpet at the Women's Sports Foundation. You were wearing a pink dress. Do you remember what year that was? Like bright pink.
I usually don't wear colorful ones either. That's interesting. Or was it red or was it pink? I do remember
bright.
A red. It was pink. Wow.
I could probably pull it up. You look good, girl. You were killing it on the red carpet. And I remember, you know how the red carpet is at WSF? It's kind of like a fast thing. And you just popped into a picture and I was like, Julie Foudy's in my picture. It was so exciting. I can't remember. It must have been like early days of 2012 or 13 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know that Elena Lynn is a past president as well of the Women's Sports Foundation.
Let's go.
All right. Shall we do this, party people?
Let's go.
Elena, the first thing we always do in the pod is we have you set the scene, where you're at, what you're doing, all those things.
Okay. Setting the scene. I am in Reno, Nevada, which for those geographically not familiar is really close to the California border next to Lake Tahoe. I am in our office bedroom with memorabilia, like behind me is a adaptive surf picture. There is some Elena Jane shrine stuff going on behind me. and you can't see it, but there's a whole Hot Wheels city at my feet. For my almost five-year-old kid.
That's his thing, huh? Hot Wheels right now?
All the things, cars. Yeah, he's still in that cars phase, you know? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Aw. Good.
I was listening to you on Armchair Anonymous, which was amazing, by the way. And I had always known your story from, I thought I had known your story, I should say.
And Jules, I apologize to interrupt. Armchair Anonymous is a podcast that Elena did, and it is a fantastic listen.
Mm-hmm. Aw, thank you, guys.
It's so good. And
I knew right away, you just gave your first name, but right away I was like, oh my God, this is actually Elena Nichols on here. And I didn't know the full story. I knew part of your story, but I didn't know the full story. So we thought we should start there because my goodness, we'd love for you just to share your story and you can start where you want to.
Well, thank you guys for those kind words. That was such an honor to be on Armchair Anonymous, which is a subset of the Armchair Expert podcast with Dax Shepherd and Monica. And I knew right away when the prompt for that particular Armchair Anonymous was underdog stories, I was like, oh my God, this is my moment. You know, I've been listening to Armchair for all since the beginning. And I so love how raw and transparent Dax is and how his light, you know, his unique light really allows other people to just shine their own stuff. Cause it's like, we're not trying to pretend here. He's just being honest. And so, you know, when I was given the opportunity to tell my sort of underdog story, I don't mention this a lot in general, but part of my underdog story was, you know, my family of origin story is my mom had met my dad in a small town in Wyoming, Rock Springs, Wyoming. My dad is a coal miner or was a coal miner. Like third generation coal miner. My mom was a waitress, you know, it was very humble beginnings. And, you know, right out of the gate, like I was born in March. My dad was killed Christmas Eve of 1983, 9 months after I was born, by a drunk driver. And, you know, it was such a pivotal moment in all of our lives. My mom specifically, being 24 years old, having to kind of pick up the pieces of her life with a brand new baby. I was 9 months old. My brother was 3 and my older sister was 2. So she just had her hands full.
And 24 years old with now 3
24.
Kids.
Right.
And no husband. Okay.
And no husband. And so, you know, it's just the hand that she was dealt. And as I've grown and had my own kids, I've just really been able to unpack that, as being something that happened, and she played her cards the way she did. And, you know, there's no real emotional resentment left there or anything like that. So, you know, right out of the gate, we get thrown that curveball. About 5 years in was when we were pretty much needing an intervention. And that's when my grandparents came along. We were living in Las Vegas. We were homeless. And my mom just wasn't dealing very well. She was having a hard time, understandably so. And my grandparents came for a visit and realized they had to step in and see what they could do. So they took me and my older sister back to Farmington, New Mexico. We didn't really understand it at the time, you know, what was happening. I don't think my grandparents knew that they were adopting us either. It was just kind of maybe a temporary thing that turned into a lifelong, you know, experience. So that's kind of how it all started. But one of the best parts about that was my grandparents were in a position, you know, being stable and retired and financially able to do so. They got me into sports when I was 5. And, you know, that was such a, for anybody that's a fan of this pod and that's an athlete, like, you know, that transition for me was so important. And so I started playing t-ball and little sporty spice, Elena Jane was born. when I realized I could work really hard and set little goals and achieve them and you make points. And it was just like, it just made so much sense for me, you know? And I think my grandma saw that in me. She saw how important it was, but also she saw my talent and was able to then get me into Boys and Girls Club basketball and volleyball. And I played 3 sports my whole life. And
your brother, like, you're still in communication with them, or are you still close to them? Are they in your life?
Yeah, my mom is in my life. She actually is doing really great. I don't know, we've done a lot of healing, and I just really love and appreciate her for who she is now. And, you know, it took me a long time to get there. It wasn't like when I was 13 and she wasn't being my mom and I didn't understand it, I had a lot of resentment, you know, in my life. And so my brother is not physically in my life although spiritually is really an inspiration for me.
Sorry, I meant at that time when you were a kid, were you still in connection with them as you were being raised by your grandparents? I know what happened to your brother, and I'm sorry about all of that as well.
Yeah, thank you. My mom was kind of in and out. She lived in Las Vegas. She stayed in Las Vegas with my brother. So we visited during that time. And there were periods of years that went by that we didn't see each other. But we did visit. I remember in high school, I had a fast pitch softball tournament in Laughlin, Nevada, and she came and visited me there. And it was really important for me to have her see me play fast pitch. And, you know, that was really I was putting all my eggs in that basket. That was really what I was focused on in high school. And my ticket out of my little town of Farmington, New Mexico. And I was being actively recruited by a few colleges, and one of them, which is kind of ironic, was LSU. I recently, within the last 3 years, went through all of my childhood boxes of memories and stuff, and I found a recruitment letter from LSU, which kind of is ironic because I would eventually go to the University of Alabama later on for wheelchair basketball. So not to jump ahead, but just was really focused on fast pitch softball in high school. And I had also gotten really excited about snowboarding earlier in junior high. And so, you know, one thing that I said on the pod with Dax is I saw a lot of my like red flag behavior playing out in hindsight. Like as a child, I definitely had some risk taking behavior, even on and off the field. Like I would dive for outfield balls that were nowhere near me. You know, I was like ready to risk it for no reason. Sliding into head first into home base every time just for the thrill of it, you know? Right. I was like an adrenaline junkie for sure. I got into high school. I was really, I don't know if I was peaking at that time, but in high school, I was totally on fire. I was like popular. I was playing fast pitch softball. I was like, my grades were great, having fun with all my friends. And it was November 19th of 2000 when a couple of my friends and I decided we'd go out into the backcountry to snowboard and ski and just play around in the snow. We had gotten like a fair amount of snow the night before, but it was so early in the season, there wasn't a base and it was definitely not safe to go out there. But, you know, I always say I was 17 years old and 17 foot tall and invincible and all that. We went out into the backcountry that day, and earlier that summer, I had been kind of obsessing about doing a backflip on my snowboard. It was like just something I really wanted to do, and I could practice on the flat ground. I could do a backflip and practice on a trampoline. And that day we went out, we had built some jumps, and I sort of impulsively towards the end of the day, I just decided I wanted to try my first backflip on my snowboard without really thinking it through, very impulsive and sort of ill-advised, slid down the hill. And as I was approaching that jump, I just decided the last thing I want to do is under rotate. So I threw my feet over my head as hard as I could. As I was finishing that first rotation, I realized like, this is too much. I gave it too much. And now I'm going into the next rotation. At about a flip and a half, I landed right on my back on what I later learned was a 4 foot boulder that was underneath the snow. And the density of the landing with that rock there was what broke my back in three places. I shattered T11, which is in the small part of your back, and the shards, like the bone shards from that, flew through my spinal cord, and I was paralyzed upon impact.
I'm sure you've told this story a lot. What is it like when you tell it still? Do you go back there?
Yes, and I don't really process it in an emotional way when I tell the story. I think about it as a scene in a movie, if that makes sense. A scene that I remember really clearly, really vividly. Like, I remember the feeling of becoming paralyzed, the shock that went through my body. It was audible. It was like a wong, like an electric sound that then I felt leave from my waist down to my toes. And out through the bottom of my feet. And I remember right away, you know, I screamed really loud, and it wasn't that painful. It was just so confusing. That loud noise was so confusing. My friend came over and I asked him right away, I said, "Where's my board and my boots? Like, I am so confused." And he looked at me with that look in his eye, and he said, "They're on your feet." And I was like, "Oh my God, I can't feel it. I can't feel them anymore. I don't know where my legs are anymore." You know, like, it just was so confusing. But it was enough confusing for me to say, "Look, don't move me. I think I said that I'm paralyzed, but like, it didn't make sense at all, you know?" But yeah, thanks for asking. I don't really, you know, I think if I did some real deep dive, like, breath work around that, and maybe some EMDR and like therapeutic stuff, I would really go emotionally back into it. But for me to tell the story, I just think about this 17-year-old girl in a scene from a movie that, you know, went through something that was incredibly hard and devastating and life-changing all in the blink of an eye.
You have all this going for you. You're thinking about going to play collegiate softball. As you said, doing really well, grades are well, life is good, and then this happens. How does one deal with that?
You know, reverting back to my family of origin story and my grandparents that ended up raising me, they, having Norwegian backgrounds, or maybe because they're from a certain generation, the emotional agility in my household was like not to speak of it, you know. It was like, here we go, like, what do we need to do here, like, what's our next best move to manage? And it was like, let's remodel the bathroom, you know, all those things. But it wasn't like, how are you feeling? It's not like, let's really emotionally deal with this. And part of me feels really like grateful for that. My grandma was gritty, tough, and really familiar with grief and loss from an early age, with her her parents dying at a young age. And so, you know, it just set me up to be really gritty, tough in one of the hardest times of my life. And I've later had to emotionally deal with that. So, you know, whenever you have a big loss, you have to grieve. It's either now or later. And for me, it was later. So what happened for me was, I got airlifted out of the backcountry, underwent an 8-hour back reconstruction surgery, woke up in the ICU, you know, newly paralyzed and really confused. And I had a doctor come in and talk to me about what it meant that I was paralyzed. You know, like, the spinal cord is the only nerve organ in your body that doesn't regenerate. Your brain, your heart tissue, your lung tissue, it all can come back except your spinal cord. And he said, you know, whatever damage is done now will do its best to heal, but whatever you have in terms of recovery within the next 2 years is probably what you'll have for the rest of your life. And so, you know, for me, it gave me a little bit of hope, thinking like, oh, there's some of this is within my control. Like, if I work really hard in rehabilitation and do all the things, maybe I'll walk again. You know, there was like a little sliver of hope in there, which I, you know, looking back, really appreciate. And so that's what I did. I mean, I had to learn how to sit up again. And I had this big brace around my waist and up to my neck that was like holding my body together. I broke my body in half, you know, and so I had to wait for my bones to heal. And, you know, I had to learn how to sit up and get dressed and transfer from the bed to my wheelchair and go to PT and learn just how to sit. I just had to learn how to sit, because the bottom half of me was just not, I didn't have my quads or my hips or anything to push off of. So I'm sitting on like, essentially like my torso, you know. And so finding that balance and getting used to what that felt like, it took a lot of like kinesthetic rewiring. But, you know, every task they threw at me in physical therapy, I checked it off like any athlete. I was like, check, 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 check. Okay, what's next? And so I got to the long leg braces portion of the rehabilitation, which is, if you picture Forrest Gump and his long leg braces that kind of lock at the knees, that was where I thought that I was going to relearn how to walk. And so they put these braces on, I could stand up. And walking was so sketchy. I mean, I could fall backwards, I could fall forwards, or just jackknife. I didn't have my hips or glutes or anything. And but I focused on that for about a year and a half. I did everything I could to learn how to walk again. And I remember it took me 45 minutes to walk around my block at my grandma's house. And I was like, I did it, you know. And it didn't, there was none of that. It was all sort of in vain, right? I wasn't making a connection with my brain and my legs. It was just physically like forcing my body to do something that it no longer could do. And so long story short, I ended up going to the University of New Mexico and, you know, doing the in-state stuff. And I basically kind of hit an all-time low at that point. It was about 2 years after my injury where the doctor said, you know, things aren't going to work out after that. And I genuinely didn't think I wanted to keep living as a person in a wheelchair. And so it was at that time when, and I know that there's something bigger at play, if you want to call it God or the universe or just like beautiful serendipity. I was cutting through the gym at the University of New Mexico, which I've never done before, the auxiliary gym. And I am just physically just being so closed off, right? My head's down, I'm rolling around. I feel so misunderstood, right? I was an able-bodied athlete less than a year ago, and now I'm in college. Everybody that I meet that didn't know my story of what happened to me just assumes that I've been in a wheelchair my whole life. And I'm like, right. No. That's not me. And I'm still not comfortable with who I am. So I want to be who I used to be. And it's like all this hard stuff and heavy. And yes. So I'm pushing through this gym and I'm just kind of mad and not dealing well. And I look up and I see an entire team of people in wheelchairs playing basketball.
That's so insane that you never go through this gym. And there they all are too.
Right. And also, I had never even met somebody my age in a chair,
right?
Let alone athletic or that told me about sports or anything. It was the year of 2000. The year 2000.
Like, Conan O'Brien, that's a little Easter egg. Hopefully we'll get there.
Yes.
But
yes.
Keep going.
Well, yeah. So this is really getting a long story, but.
No, not at all. This is what we're here for. Yeah,
that was the other pivotal moment. It was like I broke my back and 2 years later, I'm rolling through this gym and I see this whole team of people playing wheelchair basketball. And when I say my jaw was dropped, it was physically on the floor. I was like, what? You know, all of these people are paralyzed or they're missing legs or whatever their thing is. And they're not only like being athletic, but they're moving so fast and so gracefully, and they're hitting each other and they're falling over and they're getting up and they're shooting 3-point shots from a seated stationary position and sinking them. And I'm like, what? Like, what? And so, you know, for me, it was like I had to have seen it being played. Like, if somebody told me about adaptive sports, I'd be like, I'm sorry, I'm a fast pitch softball player. Yeah. Like, I don't think so, you know, right. All prideful. But for me to see this being played and to actually experience the athleticism and the gracefulness and the strategy of wheelchair basketball, and I was just like so mind blown. So that day I got into a basketball chair and I strapped in.
Did they see you watching him blown away?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. That's exactly what happened. So actually, the only girl that was playing that day, her name is Lorraine Gonzalez, one of the biggest girls to play the sport ever to this day. And I'm talking big, like traps or inner ears, like muscles, like so big. She lost a leg to cancer. So she came over to me and she goes, hey, you look athletic. You want to try it? And truthfully, that was
first. You have no idea how effing athletic I am.
But for the first time, I mean, up until that point, I went from sliding into home base face first to everybody's tiptoeing around me because I'm disabled handling me with all this care. And I'm just genuinely like, I want to get hit. I want to get out there and get hit by a chair. And so she tells me I'm athletic and I'm like, oh my God, I am? Really? I'm still athletic, you know? And she tells me, like, yeah, let's get into this chair. You should try it. And I got into the chair. I pushed, like, so hard and fast. It felt like I was running for the first time in 2 years.
Freedom.
That feeling, freedom. My heart rate got beating. My, you know, that energy you get in your head when all your endorphins are firing and you're just like, whew, ah, you know, like I get chills just thinking about it. And then, you know, I go over to the hoop and I see how far away it is. And I can't imagine, like, how are all these other people with my same disability doing this? And like in that moment, I didn't have an excuse. I didn't have any reason that I couldn't do it. And, you know, it was really up to me to make the choice whether or not I was going to take the challenge or not. And that was like a magic, that's the magical moment I think that sports gives to anybody. It was like, I have everything I need. Like, let's see if I can, you know, I still have my heart and my arms work and like, let's go.
Right.
And so, you know, I tried, I shot as hard as I could, didn't hit the rim. Like it was really frustrating, but I knew that I could do it. And I learned that the team that played that night, they practice every Wednesday. And I kept going back and I kept getting better. And I just, you know, just like I started with T-ball, it was like set a goal, achieve it. You know, I started building this confidence that I needed to also get through my other life where I had to get out of my dorm room and go to Algebra 2. Like, I didn't want to do that. Right. I didn't want to be seen in public, let alone go do this. All this schoolwork, like I just didn't have the gumption in me. I didn't have the will. And then I started playing basketball and it was like more therapeutic than anything I had done up until that point. I mean, that's why we're such passionate advocates for sports for young girls and women. It's like, we know how important this is for your confidence. We know it's like essential for your everyday health and wellness. And so, you know, for me, it was like once I started playing, everything started to fall into place and the door started swinging open for me. Like I learned about a program at the University of Arizona that had an all women's team, not a varsity sport or NCAA sponsored, but it was like they treated it like varsity. So it was like, we're not touching a ball preseason until, you know, November. And then we're just doing chair skills. And I'm talking about blisters on every surface of my hands and fingers. Wow. Like my wrist was like sprained without ever impacting it. Like I was working.
Right.
And that was what I wanted. I wanted an outlet for being an elite athlete like I was before, you know, and that's what it was for me. And within the first year, I learned that there's this thing called the Paralympic Games, which is the Olympic Games for people with physical disabilities that goes on 2 weeks after the Olympic Games and competes in all the same venues. It's the second largest sporting event in the world. Like, what? Like, blow my mind. And, you know, all of a sudden I had this new, really exciting goal and dream of competing for the U.S. Paralympic team.
Could you have ever imagined 5 Paralympics, 6 medals, first woman to get a gold in the winter and summer games? I mean, think about that. I think back to that moment when you were sliding down to do that jump. And I imagine for people with spinal cord injuries or accidents, right, like that, there is a lot, maybe, and I don't know for you if there was or not, there is a lot of, why did I do that, right?
Yeah.
I know I'm 17, but why? Did you ever let yourself go there or do you not go there ever?
No, yeah, that's a great insight because there is a big difference between, you know, something happening to me, like if I had gotten paralyzed in a car accident that was somebody else's fault or whatever. But I did that to myself. And there were a lot of moments, especially in that 2 year period before I started playing wheelchair basketball, where I would ruminate on the fact that I just ruined my life. I did that to myself. I cannot believe you were so irresponsible, like, you know, and then there's so much to be said about the amount of structure that I had, the amount of nurturance and guidance that I didn't have, you know,
right.
That risk-taking behavior was also rooted in the fact that my dad was killed in a drunk driving accident when I was 9 months old, you know,
yeah.
There's that stuff, you know, it's like, So I've done a lot of therapy. I've done a lot of healing. I've done a lot of reckoning with it all. And I'm truthfully at peace with it now. But yeah, there was certainly a time when I was so regretful.
Yeah, I could imagine that weighs on people. And not in, mm-hmm. in a sense like that you made that decision, but that this happened to me. Why did mm-hmm. this happen to me? Right? And not being able to get over that. And the fact that you found this new outlet to release yourself from that, again, speaks to the power of community, the power of sport, mm-hmm. and finding this whole other outlet for you to channel your you know, energy and skill and all of that.
You know, I'm forever indebted and so grateful to sports and the opportunity to continue playing sports as an adaptive athlete. It's like, if I didn't have that, I just wouldn't be able to do this. I wouldn't be who I am supposed to be. I'm truthfully mm-hmm. an athlete in my heart and soul. And if I didn't have that opportunity, and you know, after I started playing wheelchair basketball, I started traveling internationally. I'll never forget going down to Rio de Janeiro for one of my first international trips for a pair of Pan American games. And I met women that were equally as athletic and had as much drive, but they didn't have the equipment. They didn't have a basketball chair. They didn't have the opportunity to play, you know, and it just shifted everything for me. I remember how I had always been hanging on to a little bit of that bitterness about the wheelchair. Like, and in that moment, I just said, you know what? I'm so grateful. Look at what I have. Look at the opportunities I have. And yeah, it's just perspective.
I would love to go to the part of the movie where you went from being a gold medalist in wheelchair basketball to saying, I've got something else I'd like to conquer, and it's on a ski slope. If you could take us through that, because on the tail end of that, I want to crawl in your brain and walk around and find out how you are so comfortable with the uncomfortable and beginner's mindset.
That's good. Okay, so fast forward, University of Arizona, wheelchair basketball, made my first Paralympic team, went on, got recruited by the University of Alabama for my master's degree, played there. And then the year of 2008, I graduated with my master's in kinesiology and went to my first Paralympic Games. It was like the most epic summer of my life. I was like, school's over and I'm going to the Paralympics. It was like the best, most incredible story. We, you know, went in undefeated, won the gold. Prior to that, I had met with the National Sports Center for the Disabled's alpine ski coach, and his name's Eric Peterson. Before I left to Beijing, I met with him, sat down and said, here's what I want to do. Go to Beijing, win the gold medal. With the $5,000 that we win with that gold, which you both know is way too, we're missing a few zeros on the end of that number. Now we have equality with our prize winnings as Paralympic yeah. athletes.
It's awesome.
Ooh, ooh. Yeah. Yeah. I had $5,000 to start my next thing.
Yeah.
And I told him I wanted to win the gold. With that money, I wanted to start skiing in his program and within 2 years go to the 2010 Vancouver Paralympic Games. And he looked me dead in the eye and said, I think you should focus on 2014. We'll just take it one step at a time. Like, that's impossible.
Do you know who I am, sir?
That's what was happening in my head. I said, oh, you don't know me, do you?
Come on, man.
You know, and that's just a testament to that mentality I had at the time, right? Like, I had so much momentum and motivation was really working for me. And I was working hard and I deserved to have that momentum in my life. And so that's what I did. We won the gold. I moved out to Winter Park, Colorado, started ski racing. And at the time I had skied a few times, like during Christmas break as I was training for basketball. But like, certainly was not that independent when I started training for, you know, alpine ski racing. I mean, first time I go out, my coach said, you know, do a few laps, meet me up at the training hill. And I was like, wait, get on the lift by myself and like ski by myself? And that he was like, he pushed a little bird out of the nest. I just had to figure it out. I fell off the lift like 9 times that day. It was just a disaster. And, you know, but I figured it out. And within 2 years, it was like the Cinderella story just continued from basketball. I was able to win the first, my first season ski racing. I won the national title in downhill and super G, which are the really fast events. You know, the tech events are giant slalom and slalom. And so risk-taking behavior is kind of playing in my favor at this point. Yeah. It's not like,
yeah, you don't mind going fast.
I don't mind going fast. And the other girls are working it up, you know, working up that courage. And I'm like, let's send it, you know?
Hey there, Dope Village. As y'all know, Ally has backed Laughter Permitted since day one of our podcast as our financial ally. And honestly, Lynn, I might just tattoo Ally on my forehead. And Ally is currently on a mission to change the game for women sports.
And get this, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, Atlantic Coast Conference, United States Golf Association, and the Las Vegas Aces, Ally has committed to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And you, my friends, can be part of the change by watching your favorite athletes crush it on TV, by going to women's sporting events in person, by, I don't know, maybe listening to every single episode of this amazing podcast on Trailblazing Women. Because every time you show up for women's sports, you are helping move the game forward. You can learn more about Ally by visiting ally.com.
So that first season, I made the Paralympic team, which needed to happen to set me up for the next season to go to Vancouver. I really didn't have that much time. And it's funny because if I knew exactly the steps I needed to take, I probably would have messed it up. But it was like a little bit like just ski fast and let the rest, you know, take care of itself. And so, yeah, there I was. Like my dream came true. And I think the most important part about that is it was a ridiculously big dream, but it would have never happened if I didn't think of it first. Right. So I like set that goal and there I was, like, I couldn't believe it. I'm in Vancouver 2 years after the Beijing Games. I'm a developmental athlete. I have nothing to lose. And for anybody that is an athlete, you know, that's the best position to be in. I didn't have anything to lose. Let's go. So the first race that we're set to ski is the giant slalom, not one of my best events, but it all worked out to where the Austrian girl fell. She was definitely going to win it, but she fell. There I am looking at a gold medal dead in the face, and I start grieving. I have this personal issue with my brother passing away, crying. It was all really emotional. And I just kind of throw up a prayer to my brother. I'm like, you got to help me out here. Like,
on your final run?
On my final run, right before I win a gold medal, like, I was ready to win it. And then I start crying. So, you know, I prayed to my brother. I pushed out of the start gate. I truly don't remember a single second of the race. I get to the bottom, look at the Jumbotron, and my name's on top. And it says Elena Nichols, champion. And it's like, what? I start crying, you guys. And it was like, not yes. cute. Not cute. Real not cute.
Oh, we love the ugly cry on a podium.
Oh, yeah. Totally. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable for that to have happened. And I mean, talk about thinking my athletic career was over at 17 when I'm laying in a hospital bed. And I didn't even know it at the time, but I had made history as the first female American to win gold in the Summer and Winter Games.
How did you take it from you think of something and then you actually go do it? Like, that's the one thing. Like, there's the thinking, but you go do it, all of these different avenues, canoeing, you've done adaptive surfing. What gets you to the action?
You know, it's the minute little steps, first things first kind of thing, right? And for me, it's always been a great, like an exciting challenge to figure out how to go about it. So like for me, adaptive skiing, I'm like, okay, I need a grant to buy an adaptive ski. What's that, $5,000? $6,000. Okay, let me see. Google, you know, and then I'm like, okay, I got that. So now I need some skis. Who do I like? Or, you know, whatever. So it's like those little steps, one at a time. And it's like all that really matters is a sense of openness in my heart and my mind. You know, it's like if I go into something thinking it's going to be too hard, it's not possible, it's never going to work, like that, of course it's not, you know. But if I'm like, yeah, this will probably happen. Yeah, I could probably do that. You know, that's the energy. It's really about that energetic exchange of like, I don't know how, but it's probably doable. Let's go. You know, right. That's the energy that it really makes a difference.
Ah, that's so good. It's so true. That mindset shift of just, okay, I'm going to try. And what's the worst that can happen here? What would you tell someone, what advice do you give? Because I'm sure you get this a lot, of someone going through either a similar experience in terms of your world being turned upside down, or, you know, maybe it's not even physical, it's emotional, it's mental, and they're not, you know, they're struggling to accept their current reality.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think back to that really dark time when I hadn't started playing sports again. And I think about how important it was for me to just do one little thing at a time that would lead to the next better, bigger thing, you know? So it was like, some days it was like, let's get out of bed. Let's get out of bed. Let's get dressed. Let's go outside. Let's get out of bed, get dressed, go outside, maybe get your body moving. It's really about realizing that life is going to be like that at times. And the sooner you can accept it for what it is, the sooner I quit comparing my old life to my new life and wishing it was different, I just accepted it. This is my new normal. This is who I am now. That's when the growth and the change started to happen and I was able to move forward. And it's truthfully one of the hardest human experiences you can have when you're in that middle ground, when you don't know if you want to keep going or not. And if you are there, it's like, let's make one good decision today that'll lead to the next best decision.
So good.
We need 3 more hours.
I know.
Well, I've really appreciated you guys having me on today.
Oh, we're not done with you yet, Lena. This is when we get to the Lynn game.
Oh, sweet.
You know, so you have your competitive outlet. Mm-hmm. And I need my competitive outlet. And that's from the Lynn game. That's how it all started, is I got really excited about playing this game and I wanted to win every single one.
That sounds about right, Cody.
Yeah, I know.
Elena, you are about to go head to head with Julie in a game of trivia.
Ooh.
Every game has a different theme. Today's theme is grab bag. It can be, questions can be about anything. Key to this game is the noisemaker, how you chime in. So if you could give us your noisemaker mechanism, please.
Does that work?
Looks like a spork and a spoon.
That's right.
Jules, that's what do you right. have for us today?
I have my trusty coin British phone booth shaker.
We're sticking with that. Okay.
Yes. We are.
There are 5 questions, Elena. Best of 5 wins. They're all multiple choice. At any point that you think you know the answer, you can spork and spoon in.
Okay.
Spork in!
Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Question 1. What is Taylor Swift's middle
Wait,
name?
Did you say the theme of this one?
Oh, grab bag.
Grab bag. Oh, okay. It's a grab bag. Sometimes we have a theme. Okay. Oh, God. A Swiftie question? Taylor Swift's middle name?
Yes. Is it A, Allison, B, Betsy, or C, Donna?
Allison. Oh.
Thank you for upholding the integrity of the Lynn game. Incorrect. Yes.
Yes. I was totally guessing.
Well
Wait,
done.
That is correct, you said, or incorrect?
It's correct.
Correct. Allison. Okay.
Question 2. What actress played the president in the Barbie movie? Was it A, Issa Rae, B, Kate McKinnon, or C, America Ferrera? Ooh, shucks.
I think the spork won.
Okay.
I am going to answer A, Issa Rae.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well done.
Okay, thank you.
Although I did love America Ferrera's role in that movie as well. The monologue, I just want it on a loop.
Preach.
Okay.
2-0.
Oh, I Elena can't get smoked. I cannot get smoked in this.
Come on,
question
Jules.
Shit. Three. You can win with this one, Elena. What candy is known for its slogan, "Taste the Rainbow"?
Oh.
Is it A, Starburst?
Oh.
B, Snickers, or C, Skittles?
Skittles! I know I won that. Is it right?
It's correct. Yes. Did you know that answer, Elena?
I did.
You can chime in. Were you just...
Before you're done reading?
Yes.
Oh,
shucks.
Okay.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Let's. You know what? Great. Let's go. It's a game.
I'm so sorry. You could have won it there. 2-1.
2-1. Elena, question 4. Where are the majority of a butterfly's taste buds located? Is it A, on their feet, B, on their wings, or C, in their eyes? Julie.
Wings.
Incorrect. Your options, Elena, are A, on their feet, or C, in their eyes.
Oh, okay. It seems to me like the eyes are also really doing a lot of other things. So I'm going to go with feet.
Correct.
Yes.
Oh, that was a really good way of breaking it down. Oh, I mean, shoot.
The so feet are smart. Doing other things too, but they're also landing and tasting, apparently.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's where you're touching it. You wouldn't rub your eyeball on something, maybe.
Right.
All right, most pressing question. I saw on Instagram that you got barreled.
Yes.
Oh, in your adaptive surfing. That looks so much darn fun. And that is like my dream, is to get in a barrel, because I can't even get up barely on a surfboard. But and if I'm surfing a wave, it's one of those little slow crumblers. There's no barrel to that.
Yeah. The whitewash.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so rad though. You've picked that up so fast.
Thank you. Well, I have been actually adaptive surfing now for 10 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's, as you know, as a surfer, it is a journey to get to that point, and it's every surfer's dream to get barreled. And man, what a dream come true. It was on my grandma's birthday. She has since passed, but it was November 9th. I'll never forget it. And the ocean really gave that to me. Like the way that Mama Ocean was working with me that day, it was perfect offshore winds. It was like 4 to 6 foot at Huntington Beach. And we had a women's heat, which there's only like 3 other women's wave skiers in the world, right? So what I do is called wave skiing. You sit on what basically looks like a surfboard on the bottom, an open kayak on the top. My feet are out in front. I strap in at the waist, and then I use a kayak paddle to paddle into the waves, right? So there's only like 3 of us in the world that do it, women.
Right.
And so we have our women's heat at like 8 a.m. perfect timing. The water is just so clean. And that wave, I mean, all the waves, it was the best wave of the day, you know?
Right.
But then for me to have done all of the things and have all the experiences I needed to have to know to where to be on that wave and how to set myself up to drop in, set my line, duck under the barrel, like it all came together for me, and it was just like magical.
That's the perfect word. It is magical when you catch a wave. Just me catching a wave, not even getting barreled, I'm like, oh, magical. It's like everything's glittery and shiny. The world is like, yes.
It's so good.
I literally squealed when I saw it. I was like, yes.
Yes. Oh my god, thank you for bringing that up. That's one of my like best moments of my life.
And can I just say what you and your husband are doing with the High Fives Foundation? Because I know they're a big sponsor of that adaptive surfing group, right? Of the tournaments and stuff. Incredible. It is incredible.
Yeah, the High Fives Foundation has grown so much. My husband also broke his back in a skiing accident in 2006. He later was supported by the families. He was coaching kids at the time, so the family supported him. He had like $500, started the High Fives Foundation, and now he's raised millions and millions for other folks like myself and anybody who's been in a life-altering injury that happened in the outdoor space specifically. And one of the things that's most important that we do is we offer community. You know, we create opportunities to be in community, and that's where all the magic happens, right? Like when I learned wheelchair basketball and I just like got to be in the same boat as other people that were navigating this new life. And so that's what we do. And it's really such life-giving work for me to be a part of. And then not to mention, I get to surf and ski and mountain bike and all the things. And the High Fives Foundation has several events throughout the year that we host where we bring new athletes and get these folks out on the mountain and teach them how to ski again and give them all the things they need to be independent. Yeah, it's great.
My most pressing is, what is your favorite quote?
The first one that's coming to mind is, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. I mean, that's kind of the theme of my life. Yeah, it's like, let's check in with what's our narrative around this? Like, what are we doing here in our minds? That's where it all starts.
So good. High, low, cheer. Last thing we do on the pod, the high of your career, the low of your career, and the cheer is for someone who you're grateful for, who's helped you along the way.
The high of my career would have had to be winning that second gold in Vancouver. And just as a little caveat, it wasn't really about my athletic achievement that makes it the high. It was about the fact that I had overcome so much of my own personal struggle, right? Like my injury, but then my brother had passed away. And like all of the things that knocked me back that I had every reason to just say, you know what? I don't really want to. I don't. But I did it in spite of it all. And I was so proud of myself for sticking with it. And I think the universe kind of honors that and did by giving me that medal. And I made history. That was like incredible. My low was in 2012, London Paralympic Games. A bad call from a referee in the semifinal
God
game.
Referees.
Semifinal game. The ref gave us an official apology. Our souls were broken. We had to play for the bronze medal. So anyways, that was a low, but I will also say that was one of the most important losses of my life because it really like contrasting like yin and yang, dark and light. I needed that feeling to also know how great the high feels. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's
always
important too. And then one of a cheer that I'll give is to one of my original people that taught me everything I know about everything I know. Her name is Patty Cisneros Privo, and she is a two-time gold medalist wheelchair basketball athlete, was the captain of the 2004-2008 team. She's an advocate for DEI in every space, Mexican-American woman, and has just really taught me what it looks like to be a powerful embodied woman in a wheelchair. And she like put me under her little wing from the very beginning on the wheelchair basketball team and continues to just show, you know, what it looks like to be a leader in this space. And she's also part of the Women's Sports Foundation and such a rad woman.
Yay, Patty.
She's dope.
And yay to you, my friend. Your story, your resilience, your mentality, and your attitude and positivity and all of that is why we wanted you on to share it, because it's such a great reminder. I mean, I think you go through life and you think, you know, you look back on moments and go, why did that happen? And you stir on it. And instead of that, you carried on with your life. And I think it's an example that we all need and we need to be reminded, right? So I thank you for the example you set, the role model you've been, and shit, what you've done. God.
That's the thing. I feel like we've just
still doing
talked about the tip of the iceberg of your life in this conversation.
Well, you guys, this is really important. Thank you for highlighting my story and for seeing me. That's like the best gift you can give to anybody. See them as they are. So thank you. It's really an honor.
Honor for her. How about for us? Honor to listen to her full story. And can I go first? Because I'm going. I just kept finding myself going, oh my God. Oh my God. And I was trying to think of the best way to describe Elena. And it's just that she's rad. She's totally rad. Like, think about, I imagine myself at 17 thinking I'm going to college on a scholarship to play in college as an able-bodied athlete. And then next thing you know, you find yourself in a wheelchair and you've completely lost your identity. And that transformation, not just physically, but mentally, and how she did it. I mean, it goes back to the importance of hope and community and shifting mindsets and all those things. But it's just, ugh, come on. Elena Nichols, people. Awesome.
Yeah.
And she's still crushing it. She goes and wins these gold medals and then is like, yeah, but I'm not done. What else can I mm-hmm. start doing?
Yeah, for sure. I feel the spirit of Tony DiCicco today. Mm. I love my job.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. On the day we recorded this, and I told this to Elena afterwards, this was the conversation I needed on that exact day, that it felt like such a gift from the universe. Something I want to acknowledge is that I'm going to take this back to the Allie Krieger episode where I told Allie I was blown away by her openness about her healing journey and her willingness to talk about it. And mm-hmm. Elena is also open about it, about her path mm-hmm. to healing. And I wanted to bring awareness to that. So much of what she said in the episode just hit me right in the heart. And when we were done with that interview, I just had such gratitude in the moment. And then it continues to know, like, oh, I had the opportunity to meet this rad human that otherwise I wouldn't have.
Yeah. And call it a day of work. Oh, how lucky are we?
So something too I want to bring up is that I made a Conan O'Brien reference. It's a deep cut that we didn't get to in the episode. So Dope Village, if you want in on it, this is what you need to Google. Google Paul Rudd, Mac, and me. Then Google, and watch the video that comes up. Then Google Elena Nichols, Conan O'Brien. Definitely worth some Googling.
So you're saying I have to click twice, though? That could be a deterrent.
You can do it, Julie. It's worth it. There's payoff.
I believe in you.
There's payoff.
All right, questions permitted.
This comes from Kristen, who emailed us after our episode with Dr. Colleen Hacker in December. And she has two questions. Question one, Julie, what is one piece of advice or biggest takeaway that you would encourage young girls to start incorporating into their daily life now?
Oh, gosh. We're going deep, huh?
We went deep.
One thing for young girls to incorporate into their daily life?
Yes, right now.
I would say raise your hand. Raise your hand. Like, I think for young women, that's the hardest thing. And it doesn't matter how confident you are, how smart you are, you still have a lot of women who are like, nah, I'm not ready. I need to study more. I can't raise my hand. I'm nervous. Raise your hand. You're going to be just fine.
Mm.
I wish I had done more raising my hand as a young girl. And I was actually a pretty good hand raiser, but I still could have done more.
Oh, that's a great answer. Question two. Is there anyone from Etsy making posters from the awesome quotes your guests say? I could fill my office with them.
Yeah, our little sticky notes.
Sticky thoughts.
Who wants it? Put it out there. Get it. There's got to be some amazing artists that could pull those together, huh? I feel that's a good one to put in the universe.
Well,
come on, Dope Village.
As you know, I ran a 10K on Saturday.
Yeah.
I had so many sticky thoughts going through my head. Slow is smooth, smooth is fast. I truly was channeling Dr. Colleen Hacker on a hill that seemed to have no end to it. So I'm with you. We need to find a way to
little Candace, left foot, right foot.
Breathe, repeat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, our guests have given us so many quotes and ideas.
Those are good questions. Great questions, Kristen. All right, be sure to hit us up if you would. We love them for our questions permitted segment and just to hear from you, laughterpermitted@gmail.com. Thank you, Dope Village, for being such fabulous, loyal listeners. And I don't say this enough, but I do love when I'm out and about. I was at the Angel City game this weekend, their opener, and so many people saying, we're part of the Dope Village, screaming, you know, as I'm walking by, or you're just walking around town and people come up and say something. Or I met someone today on a Zoom for the first time who said she's a huge, huge listener and part of the Dope Village. So means a lot to us. Thank you. Thank you for being such loyal listeners. And thank you, of course, to our presenting sponsor, Ally, for their unwavering support from day one. And also day oneer, Kate Diaz, for our theme music. And as always, kids, remember, sing it with us.
Laughter permitted.
In that moment, I just said, you know what? I'm so grateful. Look at what I have. Look at the opportunities I have. And yeah, it's just perspective.